Welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight's video, we have a terrifying story about this soldier in the Siberian woods of the country of Russia, Mother Russia. If he dies, he dies. And what he goes through with his battalion in the woods at night will terrify you. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights. Subscribe, and let's get spooky. I don't like talking about my days in the military. I did not particularly enjoy the experience, and reminiscing about it isn't exactly my idea of a good time. My journey was supposed to be very typical for any Russian boy who had graduated high school. Go to university, get a degree, and find a nice cushy job. Things got out of hand. People died, and it was all my fault. Mom and Dad did all they could. They had never shamed me, nor called me a weakling. Instead, they sent me to Moscow for treatment. The whole year was spent on tedious therapy sessions, pills, and good old vodka. But once I turned 18, we received a letter with the seal of a local military commissariat. Mom ranted and complained, and promised to call the right people to make the commissar disappear with all his household. But my dad was silent. He saw me not being able to sleep, nor could I talk to normal people. So he decided to take drastic measures. The next morning, I was standing in front of the gloomy-looking doors with a small bag on my shoulder. It was a cold, snowy morning, like a prelude to an adventure I hadn't signed up for. My mom's eyes were red from crying. Dad looked grim. He had a chat with the commissar, and by the end of the day, I was sitting in the room with hundreds of confused and scared boys. Mom cried on my shoulder so hard she was shaking and babbling. Dad hugged me awkwardly and looked me in the eyes. I think he wanted to say something, or just hoped to see if I understood. I did. The army sounded better than asylum. After a couple of days, I was on a train in the middle of the Siberian taiga. I was surrounded by nervous 18-year-old boys. Most came from villages and small godforsaken towns in the far north. Only I and another guy were from a city. Kirill was wearing glasses and 80s mustaches and graduated from a university studying IT. I have no idea how he ended up with the rest of us unlucky bastards. Kirill kept saying that he wanted to do his duty and serve our country. Honestly, I think he had some trouble with the law. Maybe he borrowed money from the wrong guy. Maybe he knocked up a principal's daughter. The others didn't want to mingle with a city boy like me. It didn't help that I refused to drink with them. I know, a grave offense in Russia. But I couldn't break bread with some filthy gopniks. Drop it, Kirill shrugged. You call them scum, they call you fancy pants. The conflict is older than Christ himself. Just accept it and move on. I heed his words, but kept a switchblade under the pillow. When we arrived, even I couldn't hide my disappointment. The base was covered in a thick layer of snow. The old barracks looked like they were falling apart. Cracked windows, falling roofs, and icy walls. The temperature inside never rose above 20 degrees Celsius. And the food varied from barely tolerable to stuff that the Gestapo would consider inhumane to use. We embraced the suck and even tried to laugh it off. Then the drills started. Surprisingly, I managed to stay on top of my draft somehow. Do what you're told, don't drink, don't ask questions, and read the damn manual. The worst part was the Kurzaw boots and the damn foot warps. Firstly, it looked ridiculous. We had to wear a piece of rag instead of socks like some 19th century peasants. Secondly, if you wrap it wrong, you could say goodbye to your feet. As the time went on, I somewhat enjoyed it. Somewhat. All life outside the base seemed to cease to exist, and the prospect of going home became just another fairy tale. We were surrounded by hundreds of kilometers of forest with only wolves and bears as our neighbors. Trains occasionally delivered the supplies, mail, and new recruits every 3 or 4 months. Our lives before the base was just a fever dream. I liked that. Well, Kirill didn't. That's the problem with higher education. He asked too many questions, and the worst part, the guy was under the delusion that he had rights. This makes no sense, he kept whining. Who digs a hole in the middle of a field, in winter? They could have at least let us light the fire to unfreeze the ground. And I think Morozov is getting frostbite, and also... Jesus, you suck at it. I muttered, trying to pierce the rock-hard ground with a shovel. Be glad we're not on latrine duty. The second company was trying to crack the frozen shit the whole day yesterday. And who thought it was a good idea to build toilets outside of the barracks? Kirill continued. Didn't they know what would happen in winter? I mean, sure, it reduces the cost. See? You answered your own question. Oi, lovebirds. We heard the voice of Lieutenant Frolov. If you won't shut up, I'll tear your eyes out and shove them up your arseholes. Understood, Comrade Lieutenant, I shouted back. Lieutenant Frolov had the worst reputation amongst the troops for frequent punishment and a dark sense of humor. The veteran of the Second Chechen War with a nasty scar on his face. A legend said he received it when a trio of Chechens ambushed him. Apparently, they quickly realized their error in judgment and wanted to depart peacefully. But like today, the lieutenant was in a foul mood. Keep digging from here until lunch. We're gonna go for a walk after that. He said with a voice raspier than a rusty chainsaw. I think I heard Kirill groan. I, on the other hand, was thrilled. A walk meant we were going to a shooting range, and I was excited like a kid at Disneyland. Even a 7-kilometer march on a serpentine dirt road through the forest was a small price to pay. No one liked those woods. The stillness and the shadows were unnerving. But it was what was behind the bushy branches that gave us chills. Many could swear they saw the movement in the dark. Luckily, the lieutenant never sent us there after dark. Plus, we had our fun. Most of our boys received modern 5.45mm AK-47s, and others had to carry bloody dinosaurs, 6.62mm AKMs. But a couple of particularly unlucky SOBs ended up with original 1949 AKs. My AKM was rugged, old, and with deep scratches on the wooden furniture. There was a long crack on the buttstock, and the safety mechanism made funny noises. In all honesty, it was love at first sight. We had spent countless hours on the range. Not because the lieutenant was concerned for our skills, but because of 3 depots full of expiring ammo. If our colonel wrote them off, the division HQ would cut his balls off. Understandably upset, he would cut Lieutenant Frolov's balls, and then Frolov would do the same to us. Chain of command at its finest, and we were very much interested in keeping our balls intact. So each conscript was given 2 to 3 crates of ammo and permission to go wild. Very soon, the wooden furniture started smoking and gun barrels glowed bright red. My shots were mostly single, with the occasional short bursts when I felt particularly cheeky. I liked the kick and the loud bang, and the smell of burned gunpowder. Of course, I could barely see the target past 300 meters. And unlike the 5.45, my bullets were heavier, slower, and kicked harder, so aiming was trickier. All was well until some alternatively indigenous person decided to play Rambo. Morozov, drunk on power and angry at his frostbite, loaded 2 AKs, took them in both hands, and bellowed a howling war cry like an ancient Mongolian horseman. Then the idiot pulled both triggers. Of course, the burst went wild, and the impact was swift and unexpected. I felt something hit me in the helmet, and then heard the loud ringing in my ears. The world exploded and turned into a violent whirlwind. I think I passed out. I'm not sure how long it lasted. Maybe just a minute, but could have been a couple of hours. "Oi, oi!" I heard someone's voice. I tried to open my eyes and surprisingly saw Lieutenant Frolov's blurry face. "You fool, can you hear me?" I mumbled something, and Frolov finally shook his head and looked over at the idiot who had shot me. "Breathe, Moroz," the lieutenant said jokingly and patted the guy on the shoulder. "I guess we won't feed you to the wolves after all." Kirill helped me up and carried me back to the base. The lieutenant said that if I was not dying, there was no need to call a truck. My head hurt really bad. I was sure my skull cracked. Kirill was talking nonstop, trying to keep me awake. He saw in a movie how a dude died because he closed his eyes. The forest around us was cast into a perpetual gloom, the sunlight struggling to penetrate the thick foliage. The air was cold with the scent of pine needles, intermingled with the hint of gun oil and sweat. There was a silent hope that I would pass out and be released from the torment, but a quite peculiar sound woke me up. A distant and barely audible sound, almost covered by the noise of our steps. The snap of a twig? A rustling of branches? Something felt odd in it. Through the pain, I managed to turn my head towards the woods. For a moment, I saw a slick shadow darted from one treetop to another. The only thing that gave it away was the shaking of the branches. Then the forest became as still as I remembered it. I felt goosebumps down my spine. I knew that it could not be just a trick of the light and my injury. But somehow, it felt real. Too vivid. Too detailed. The blasted thing looked enormous. Scrawny like a spider and huge like a horse. And it was staring back at me. A thin, gaunt silhouette amid the bushy branches. Frolov suddenly halted, raising his hand. He stood there for a minute, not moving at all, and we could only look at each other puzzled. "Platoon, move your asses, double time," Frolov ordered. "Comrade Lieutenant, we can't..." Kirill started the protest, no doubt wondering how he was supposed to carry me and keep up with the rest. "Zip it, Morozov." "Yes, Comrade Lieutenant." Morozov was as baffled as I was. The fool was still a bit shaky since he was very close to being publicly auto-de-fe. "Help, Krasnov! Platoon, follow me, you apes! My comrades didn't complain. No one liked those woods. It felt wrong and almost as if we were intruding somewhere where we weren't supposed to be. As we sped up, the pain returned, and my hands could not stop shaking. Somehow, the memories of that night on the island came back again. The flicker of the torches, the pale faces with cold eyes, the scream, the stink of blood and raw meat. That was the first time since the incident when I felt my mind fall into the black hole of sheer panic. For a second, I forgot where I was. My eyes darted from side to side against my will. We were falling further behind from the rest of the platoon. I could barely see the backs of our comrades who were running as if there was a wolf pack after them. Morozov helped Kirill carry me. I could not even look at the fool, but my paranoia dulled all sense of anger. The road turned suddenly, and our platoon disappeared behind the wall of trees. I could still hear their grunting and huffing, but it became quieter with every second. Now my blood really ran cold. It reminded me of when I was a kid and feared the darkness in my room, while my parents slept peacefully next door. I knew they were there, but also knew they wouldn't help me if the monster under the bed decided to strike. Now I felt the same. Our comrades were no more than 30 meters away, but in these woods, it could have been as well as 1,000 miles. And I could swear it was following us. The rustling of branches and creaking of the old trunks. My panic and paranoia told me someone was watching from the treetops. Some primal instinct screamed at me to run and hide. Whatever it was, it felt wrong. Kirill shook his head and looked at me. He said it would all be all right. We'd be at the hospital soon. But I could see he was nervous. Did he see something? Or maybe it was the same survival instinct that drove me insane. The muscles on my neck tensed, my legs were weak, and my heart still pounding. I could not hear our platoon anymore. Only occasional rustles and quiet snaps. Suddenly, a figure jumped from around the corner, and he looked angry.
"Hurry up, you pregnant cockroaches, move!"
barked Frolov. He let us pass and then followed behind, shouting and cussing non-stop until we suddenly were out of the woods. Exhausted, I fell on the ground, clutching my heart and breathing heavily.
"That was fun,"
muttered Lieutenant, swearing and huffing.
"All right, clean yourself up. I'll wait for you in the storeroom. Prepare all your gear for the inspection. Be very afraid, you little... Oh, Krasnov, drag the body to the hospital, will you?"
Kirill and I burst into the hospital to find a lonely nurse at the register. Nadia, I think was her name. She was sitting at the table surrounded by tiny bottles of nail polish and was reading a magazine. Nadia saw us and rolled her eyes, angrily putting the magazine away. She looked at my wound, said it was just a scratch, and grumbled that I was distracting people from their work. Before kicking us out, Nadia hissed at us not to bother her unless I was dying, and then returned to her magazine. Kirill looked at me bewildered and then muttered, "I've stashed some aspirin in my locker. Want some?" 6 months passed. The range incident aside, it was rather quiet. My nightmares didn't cease completely, but it eased somewhat. Oleg and Yulia still came around in my dreams, and I would wake up when someone slapped my face or threw an old boot at me. Apparently my comrades did not appreciate screaming at night. Kirill tried to raise this topic, but I laughed it off. I received letters from my parents. Never told them that I got shot, of course. They were happy that I finally could catch a decent sleep and shared everything what had happened while I was away. Part of me wanted to hear that the authorities found Yulia, but realistically, I knew nobody would look for some teenage girl. By that time, the long winter finally passed. The days became longer and the nights warmer. Our joy was short-lived. The warm weather meant we could work more. The barracks wouldn't fix themselves, nor did the fence, the HQ building, the motor depots, the gardens, and, basically, we had been demoted to glorified laborers. Every morning there was more things to fix, and every night we went to bed broken in body and spirit. I hated it with every fiber of my soul. A smoke break was our only salvation. The moment where we could relax and quietly hope for the Lord to kill us until someone messed up. I was quite upset with Morozov for almost sending me to a meeting with St. Peter. So, you could understand my rage when this imbecile smoked outside of a designated area and then tossed a cigarette butt on the ground, right in front of our lieutenant. Well, jumping on a frag grenade was preferable. So here we were, running in heavy hazmat suits and gas masks in the middle of a hot day with our rifles on our shoulders and heavy backpacks full of ammo and MREs. I could smell the stink of rubber, dry armpits, and farts of previous suit owners. Sweating like a pig, I angrily glanced at Morozov, who was at the head of the column holding high a tiny coffin we built. Frolov ordered to bury the butt with full military honors. So we ran in formation like a funeral procession, crying loudly, moaning, and lamenting the passing of a cigarette butt as ordered. The sun was merciless, and the temperature reached 35 degrees. Breathing in a mask was not easy by default. Heavy backpacks and rifles didn't help either. A couple of guys had passed out and had to be carried. To say that we wanted blood would be an understatement. The folks already started arguing who would take a swing at Morozov first. All his previous transgressions were recalled, like when he tried to sneak bread from the kitchen. The entire platoon had been left without dinner for a month, or how he was walking around with his hands in his pockets. 2 hours later, we reached a remote meadow on the outskirts of the woods. It was wide and bright and buzzing of bees and grasshoppers with a sweet odor of flowers. The dark trees looked far and harmless. The sun was high in the sky.
"All right, listen up, you walking birth control mistakes," barked Frolov when we gathered around him, all puffing and huffing. "Dig!"
By the time we finished, my hand shook so hard I couldn't hold a shovel. Those who did not dig the grave were standing at attention, rifles in hands and chin high under the merciless sun. Finally, I collapsed to the bottom, feeling the cold ground underneath. Kirill was sitting already, staring absently somewhere in the general direction of Andromeda Galaxy.
"So," said the lieutenant, looking down at us, "anyone else want a cigarette?"
"I quit, Comrade Lieutenant," I whispered breathlessly.
"Good,"
he nodded.
"Now get back here. We must bury our late comrade. Bring Morozov. The man himself must do the honor."
I heard the murmur. Couldn't figure out what they were saying, but I didn't like the general mood.
"What do you mean he's not here?"
By the lieutenant's tone indicated he was a moment from committing an act of violence.
"Comrade Lieutenant," said someone scarcely. "He was just here.
He told me he was going to take a leak just over behind the trees.
Take a... What is your major malfunction, moron?
Despite being absolutely exhausted, I jump unexpecting such violent reaction.
Are you deaf, Worm? I ordered you to stand in attention. This means even if a nuke is about to fall, you bloody stand.
He grew silent for a second, and I could almost hear gears in his head turning.
All right, new plan. Drop the suits. Each squad split into fire teams. We are going after the fool. Keep visual contact. No more than 20 meters between the teams. And for the love of God, stay bloody silent. No chit-chat. No screaming.
I barely managed to get out of the grave, feeling a little bit enraged.
Let the wolves have them. No one will care.
I muttered while getting from the pit and trying to clean myself off. I was slightly surprised when the lieutenant's boot smashed into my face. The world spinned upside down and I fell back into the grave, choking on my own blood.
Listen to me, you little shit.
I could almost taste the venom in Frolov's voice.
Yes, nobody will care. Not our colonel, not the red caps, and definitely not civvies. That's why we have to. There are only us to look after each other, you moron.
And if I ever hear such talks again, I will bury you alive in this very grave, you absolute imbecile.
I'm sorry, comrade lieutenant, I replied meekly. I understand.
You understand nothing because you believe in nothing, spitted Frolov. He looked agitated, almost as if I had opened a long-buried can of worms. For me, all these talks of honor, of brotherhood, were no more than empty slogans of our esteemed generals and politicians. But not for Frolov, apparently. I guess because he fought in an actual war, unlike us.
Did he take the weapon?
Frolov already turned away, talking to the sergeant.
Yes, comrade, lieutenant.
I sighed. That was not good. If we fail to find him now, the Red Caps will just shoot the idiot. No one will risk approaching an armed deserter. Morozov managed to mess up even more.
Good. Frolov nodded to my surprise. He'll have a chance out there. All right. We have 4 hours until sundown. Meaning, only 2 hours to find him. After that, we are leaving the forest. No one, and I mean no one, stays here for the night. I want your asses out of the woods by dusk.
Once we lined up in front of the trees, looking inside the forest grimly, Lieutenant Frolov spoke again.
If you see anyone suspicious, shoot the kill. No warning shots, just shoot the bastard. All right, maggots, Godspeed.
We glanced at each other, puzzled. What did he mean by anyone suspicious? Frolov's orders made no sense. We definitely would follow them, but what the hell? We took a deep breath and walked into the forest. It felt almost as if we had crossed the invisibility threshold that separated our world and something different. The lieutenant led the charge, giving the orders with hand gestures. The buzzing of insects had stopped, and the sun barely shone through the canopy of trees. It smelled of rotten leaves, stale water, and old bark.
Can't see anything, said Kirill quietly.
Of course we were in the same team. Besides us, there were two other guys. One was Batu, an Asian fella from Biryati or Yakutia. Can't remember for sure. We never spoke much, but he was all right. Always clean and tidy. Never complained like the rest of us. And he was the best shot in the entire company, so I quite envied his talents.
The second guy was Dima. This gentleman was from some godforsaken town in the Far East. Apparently, the town was surrounded by prison camps, so Dima sounded almost proud of this fact, with half of his speech infested with Fenya, a low-life language used by bandits, thieves, and other scum. This guy tried to make everyone behave by thief's law. In his words, Dima was on top, and everyone else who didn't follow those laws were suckers whose only purpose was to serve and to suffer. Understandably, one night Lieutenant Frolov called Dima to his office, where he had spent 2 hours, and returned with a few broken ribs and fingers. The four of us slowly trudged through the forest. The feeling was unnerving, as if we were completely cut off from the world outside. Though it was almost late spring, there were still patches of snow lying around. The air was cold and moist, and the ground was wet and slippery. I again thank God that I was wearing Kirza boots. At least my feet would be warm and dry. I saw the other teams not far from us. It gave some sense of security. We moved forward, leaving the marks on the trees as we passed. The big carved X's were hard to miss. This way we could know the way back. The silence surrounded us, and even other teams sounded further than before. We didn't see any signs of wildlife. No droppings, no tracks, no burrows. Even spiders were nowhere to be seen. "Strange," whispered Batu, cutting another mark on the tree. I don't know why his words caught my attention, but I decided to come closer.
"What?
See that?" He showed me the blade, covered in brownish ooze.
"So?" I mused, inhaling a slightly sweet scent. "That's rot from the sapwood. Very old," he said, looking puzzled.
"And? The tree is sick. What's the deal?"
"It looks young and healthy," he pointed at the tree. "But it is almost completely rotten inside out. Should be dead long ago."
"Well, strange things happen," I shrugged.
"Not like this." He shook his head. "Can you walk if your muscles turn the mush? Don't think so."
I felt tingling on the back of my head.
"Hey, fairies!" I heard Dima call out. "Are we moving or sightseeing?"
I saw Batu tensed. Freyr was a term to use in criminal circles, and it was not a flattering term. Kirill gave me a look, and I put my hand on Batu's shoulder, calming him. He was right. There was no time for blood feuds. We continued moving, but this time I was listening closely, trying to catch any suspicious sounds. But so far, I haven't heard a thing. No birds singing, no insects buzzing, or even distant echoes. I kept glancing towards the other teams walking a few dozen meters away from us. The silence became oppressive, and it took all my willpower to keep my mouth shut. I desperately wanted to shatter the silence just to hear something. Well, apparently, Dima did not intend to hold up.
"Vlad Murky Central, the wind of the north," he started singing quietly.
"Shut it, damn Gopnik," I hissed.
"What did you say, Frary?"
he spatted, turning to me.
"What, you think you're the boss, huh? You think you can mess with me?"
Dima advanced towards me, not holding his tone.
"Did you forget your place, sucker?"
"Back off, scum," I growled, cautiously putting the gun away.
"We are on a search mission, so shut it, lowlife."
He looked at me curiously and tilted his head, like a kid looking at a new toy.
"A mission?" he laughed mockingly. "Oh, you're some kind of special agent, huh? What a loser."
I grabbed him by the throat, surprising even myself. My fingers dug into his flesh, and Dima's eyes widened in shock. I kept pressing, feeling rage inside. It felt good. Better than the constant pressure and anxiety that ground my sanity the last hour. His eyes widened. Dima coughed and started to wave his hands, trying to hit me. "Now, will you shut up?" I told quietly, still holding his throat tight. "We'll keep looking for Morozov, and if you have a problem with me, we'll deal with it on the base. Understood?" Batu and Kirill were on us in an instant. Batu was trying to pull me back, and Kirill was holding my other hand with the bayonet in it. I released Dima and started walking away, trying to calm my anger and regretting the whole ordeal. Suddenly, I felt a kick in my back. Then came a storm of punches that landed on my head, my back, and my kidney areas. Dima was trying to pummel me into the ground. This was the final draw. I was going to kill him, to gouge his eyes out and make him eat it, then cut his balls and crucify him. Unfortunately, Batu grabbed Dima in a wrestling lock, and Kirill jumped on me and pinning me to the ground. "Stop it, you jerk!" Kirill yelled into my face. He put his knee on my throat and a foot on my wrist, holding the bayonet. Batu was still holding Dima in a lock, while the scum cried in pain. It took a while for us to calm down. I still wanted to gut Dima, but the irresistible urge to kill him had faded a bit. Kirill pressed the knee, and I started to suffocate. "Calmed?" he asked sternly. "Are you sure?" I nodded. "So, nothing had happened. I didn't see anything, is that clear?" I nodded again. "Good." He helped me up, and I started to clean myself at dirt and leaves, avoiding Kirill's eyes. The rage had disappeared completely, replaced by shame. I messed up. I knew it. And if not for the guys, I would probably gut Dima. His life didn't matter, of course, but mine would be ruined for scum like him. "Guys, I have a question," said Batu, nervously looking around. "Where are the others?" "Huh?" I blinked confused and looked around, trying to see the silhouettes of our comrades. The forest looked as usual. Old trees, dead leaves, and patches of snow. The rare sunlight fell on the ground through the dense foliage, and no movement. Even the trees stood as if frozen. "I have an even better one," said Kirill sadly. "What time is it?" I looked at my watch. 1749. "Same," he nodded. "We are running out of sunlight. The lieutenant ordered us to be back here before sundown, so shall we?" I agreed, still trying to avoid everyone's eyes. We moved back following the markers on the trees. Dima went first, then Batu and Kirill. I stayed a bit behind, trying to put some distance between me and everyone. I wasn't sure what urged me to fight Dima, but that was too close for my taste. One by one, we passed the markings. We didn't talk or even glance at each other. I was too ashamed. Dima no doubt was furious, and already planned the jump on me at the barracks after the curfew. Batu and Kirill probably just wanted to stay away from us psychos and get back to base. The light got dimmer, washing the forest into a shade of gray. I could barely see during the twilights. Everything turned into a pure smudge. I couldn't tell a tree trunk from a person. Even worse, I could not recognize the way we went. I checked the time. It still showed 1749. I frowned. "Hey, what's on yours?" I asked Kirill. He looked at his watch, and I didn't like the expression on his face. "Batu?" "Noticed, huh?" he grunted. "Noticed what?" grinned Dima, turning to us. I felt a similar tingling in my head,
My hands reflectively pulled AKM from my shoulder.
The markings are also wrong, Batu said calmly.
The hell do you mean, wrong? Dima spat out, agitated.
What, are we lost now?
Batu sighed as if he felt relief. I guess he was hoping against hope.
I noticed maybe a half an hour ago. The markings look different. I cut the X's, right?
So?
I asked, trying to remember what markings we passed lately.
Someone cut another line in it. Now it's more like a star.
So we were following the wrong path? I concluded.
We weren't, snapped Batu.
Remember the tree I cut? The one that was all rotten?
That was the same tree, but now instead of an X, there was a star.
I frowned.
Could it be a prank?
Sure, but unlikely.
Our comrades knew better than to alter the markings. Lieutenant Frolov would skin them alive.
All right, no point in wondering, Kirill commanded. It's still our marks. We just gotta follow the path, and bloody fast. The sun is almost down.
We moved hurriedly. The darkness almost swallowed us completely. And what used to be just trunks and branches now looked like tall black figures with bony hands. I could barely see Dima ahead of our little column. Now I listened even closely. My mind already imagined the monstrous figures that lurked in the shadows behind my back, thin and slender. I could feel their gazes. Once or twice I jolted. Sure, I felt someone's breathing on my neck. But every time, there was nothing. We walked another hour, and still no end in sight. The sun completely disappeared, leaving us with a choice.
So do we move or stay? I asked no one in particular.
The column stopped and thought for a second.
Screw that, said Dima angrily. Come on, we should be close. Plus you heard the boss. No one stays in the woods at night.
Oh, so now you heed the warnings? I grinned menacingly.
We stay, said Kirill, and Batu nodded quietly.
Better to make camp, otherwise we could get lost completely.
No way, protested Dima. You could stay as long as you want, but I'm leaving.
Okay, Kira shrugged, putting his backpack on the ground.
And who put you in charge, huh?
Dima didn't intend to be quiet, and I could see that his eyes were panicking and his hands were shaking.
You just got some nerve. I'm not taking orders from Four Eyes. We are leaving.
Leave then, I smirked.
Screw you, he roared.
I heard a faint clang of a bolt. Kiram looked at Dima, pointing an AK at him.
Good enough? Asked Kira calmly. Or you'll need a demonstration.
Whoa, easy!
Dima immediately backed down, holding his hands up.
Easy, boy. No need for that. You are a straight fella.
Good. Now grab the firewood. It's going to be a long night.
We spent another half an hour preparing the camp. Batu apparently had a lot of experience, so he basically single-handedly prepared the fireplace and some makeshift sits for branches. Dima was silent, bringing the bare minimum of wood. He looked scared, and to be fair, so was I. By that time, everyone knew we were not on a picnic. All four of us gathered around the fire. We stared at the night forest, sitting inside the circle of light and holding on to our guns for dear life. My hands trembled, and I could do nothing to stop it. Fear, the most ancient emotion known to man. Now I understood why. I heard a gentle cracking of the firewood and felt its warmth. I guess it wasn't our nature to cling to the light. I could almost smell our fear in the air, like a stink from a dead horse. I didn't know how long it had been. Every time I checked the time, the answer was the same. 1749. The darkness surrounded us. Dima was blowing his nose and spitting on the ground. Kira and I tried to hold our breath and to be as quiet as possible. Bateau muttered something. Maybe a prayer? I wasn't sure. Once or twice, I thought I saw movement somewhere between the trees. Tried to convince myself that it was nothing, just my imagination or some nocturnal animal. Though I hadn't seen any since we entered this damn forest. My body tensed. I held the grip tight, and my fingers played with the selector level. Batu's muttering became louder, and I realized he was praying. Something like, Amen Padme Hum? The silence was broken unexpectedly. I heard rustling, and not just an innocent distant sound, but like something was dragging its feet over the ground. The worst part, I swear it was merely 10 meters away. The others heard it too, so we all jumped on our legs and raised the guns. Then silence returned. We desperately pointed our guns into the night, trying and failing to see what caused the sound. A few minutes and nothing happened. Then suddenly Bateau gasped and quickly turned back, pointing his AK-47 behind us. I didn't have time to ask why he did a 180 when I heard his scream. Contact! The flash of gunfire lit up the night. The roar almost deafened me. By reflex, I did what I was taught. Sent a short burst into the general direction where Batu was aiming. The muzzle flashes illuminated the forest just enough for me to notice a figure jumping fast between the trees. I could not see what exactly this thing was. It looked like a thin human with long limbs. But it didn't move like a human. Too jerky, too sporadic, and too bloody fast. I fired, but it was almost impossible to catch this thing in my sight. It hid behind the cover, jumping on the trees better than a seasoned squirrel. I could barely believe what I had seen. I moved as if memorized, as if my body had turned to jelly. Nothing made sense. This thing made no sense. I wanted to scream and to cry and to run away, to be anywhere but here. I could barely hear Dima's panicked scream when he ran into the night. Kirill tried to catch him, but joined Bateau and me once he realized that the beast was closing in. Despite the suppressive fire, the thing was getting closer, leaping from cover to cover. I reloaded the gun and kept shooting. The creature just refused to die. It's when my burst pulverized a tree just 20 meters away when something caught my attention. Some unknown force made me turn my head. Maybe it was the sixth sense or my guardian angel, but I looked back only to see another shadowy figure. The thing prepared to leap at us from the tree. I screamed and moved my entire body to face it. My vision tunneled, and as if in slow motion, I witnessed this thing jump. I could see its ugly silhouette and two eyes glinting in the light of the muzzle flashes. I pulled the trigger, and my AKM sent a long burst filling the air with bullets. It rammed into me, and I felt the nauseating stench of mucus and indescribable filth that made my head hurt. Something hit me in the face, sending me on my back. The whole world was spinning, and I could barely pull the bayonet out. We heard a howling cry and something like a child's scream, and then suddenly everything stopped. Silence once again. Bateau was laying on the ground with a nasty gash on his leg. The blood was pouring on the muddy ground filled with spent casings. Kirill was still holding the gun, jerking it from one side to another, expecting another fight. I ran towards him. It got me, he muttered through pain. Quiet, I said. Just let me get the first aid kit. I put on the tourniquet and bandaged the wound. but it was pretty clear that Batu was not able to walk by himself. I looked at Kirill, who stood frozen, still pointing his AK into the darkness. "What the hell was that?" He sounded scared, almost panicked, and I could understand. I had no idea what that was. No idea how we were going to get to the base. How do we even intend to survive the night? "Dima ran," Kirill murmured. "Did you expect anything less?" I asked, checking the plethora of ampoules I got from the first aid kit. "Watch us, would you? I'll help Batu." "What the hell were they?" Kira sounded really close to panic now. His eyes were wide, his hands trembling slightly. "What the damn BS they got hiding out here?" "Hiding?" I asked, puzzled. "Who?" "Our damn command," he screamed. "Frolov knew something. You heard him. No sound and stuff. Shoot the kill. He knew something and still sent us. This whore son sent us here." "Of course he knew," I muttered. "What, and you were okay with that?" Kirill then pointed his gun towards me. "Did you know as well? You didn't even sound surprised. Are you with Frolov from the start?" I froze, looking at the gun barrel, knowing at any moment my life could end. "Put that thing away, you dimwat." I growled through my gritted teeth, feeling rage returning. "And keep watching. Let me finish with Batu and we'll talk." I sensed Kirill's eyes on me for a few seconds, and then the fear of another attack made him do as I told. Batu was injured pretty bad, and I was not sure if I administered the painkillers correctly. The guy was silent and only winced a bit when I made an injection. "How is it?" I asked him. "I live," Batu replied, grabbing his gun that was lying nearby. "You've seen this shit before, huh?" His question caught me off guard. I sighed, forcibly trying to make the memories fade, and failing spectacularly. Oleg and Yulia looked at me from the shadows. "Something like that," I grunted, looking away. "You? Something like that?" he replied with a dry smirk. I nodded, and once finished bandaging his wound, I went to Kirill. He was eyeing me warily. "No, I didn't know him. And no, I am not in league with Frolov. I have no idea what these things are." I know, he sighed heavily. "Sorry for, well, earlier. It's just, I really don't like it, and I'm scared. Have you seen these things?" "Yeah." I lit up a cigarette and offered one to Kirill. By that time, I think I reached my breaking point. No fear, no panic. As if it was completely an ordinary thing to find some monsters in the woods. I guess it was just too much. Mostly, I was just tired and somewhat vindicated. There was something in this forest after all, eh? I signed again, looking into the night and preparing my AKM. We knew it was going to be a long march home. We made torches from my ruined uniform. The small patches of light were like islands amid the sea of darkness. Kirill was carrying Batu, who pointed the direction, while I watched for any signs of trouble. I breathed deeply, staring into the darkness, holding the torch high like Prometheus. The idea of spending more time in this forest didn't fill me with joy. I kicked myself again for not taking a flashlight. This was supposed to be our punishment, not a field exercise. We took as little as possible, hoping that the lieutenant would not notice. The flashlights were at the bottom of our list of priorities. No radio either. The things were just too heavy. The eerie silence returned. No sound could be heard. Just us, our uneven steps, and the gentle cracking of the torches. However,
We already knew that this was a lie. Those things. We had never seen anything like this. They moved so fast and inhumanly agile, jumping from tree to tree, flanking and fooling us. I tried not to think what would happen if they managed to surround us. The wound on Batu's leg was not pretty, deep and clean as if made by a scalpel. He lost plenty of blood before I was able to stabilize him. Not hard to imagine what it would look like if it was his neck and not just his leg. But the worst part, unlike us, those creatures could navigate in the dark. I didn't know how. Maybe they used echolocation like bats, or straight up had infrared vision like Predator. It unnerved me. The fact that we were blind, bumping like a bunch of drunkards in the dark. They could watch us and wait and savor our fear. Hell, one of them could sit on a tree 10 meters away, deciding what body parts they wanted to eat first. The thought of that made me look up, but of course, I found nothing. The bastards might be looking straight at my face and I wouldn't even be able to tell. I kept my AKM on full auto, ready to fire at any moment. We knew we could hurt them. At least I hoped we could hurt them. The alternative was not inspiring. Maybe Dima didn't get far after all. The guy ran straight into the dark, screaming like a lunatic. Judging how fast they jumped, I doubted Dima would have gotten far. We walked and walked again, and walked a little bit more. Several hours of painfully slow marching. Not sure how far we went in the darkness. Maybe a few kilometers? Pretty soon, I could hear Kirill huffing and slowing down. Batu was not exactly a feather. "We need to rest," Batu protested. "If they attack, we must be in full strength." Kirill just shrugged and fell to the ground exhausted. I stood guard. The dim-lighted torches was painfully small. We could barely see a few meters around, surrounded by the dense forest. In this darkness, the feeling was completely claustrophobic. 10 minutes later, we prepared to go until Batu spoke. "Am I dying, or is there a light over there?" He pointed his finger somewhere. I saw a barely noticeable flicker in the distance, like a tiny candlelight. "Well?" Kirill spat on the ground. "Objections?" We moved silently, not knowing what to expect. My eyes were darting from one tree to another. It would be really easy to ambush us if we rushed towards like moths to a flame. I felt blood beating in my ears. My palms got sweaty and my breathing was hard and heavy. I almost growled when a light in the distance disappeared suddenly. We all frowned and prepared for an attack. Ambush after all. We stood back to back, ready for a fight. Kirill was shaking, Batu was praying, and my heart was ready to jump out of my chest. My eyes were tearing up, knowing that the end was near. But to my surprise, nothing had happened. No attack followed. The silence didn't break with screeches or growls. So we carefully continued moving in the direction of the light with a slither of hope. Finally, we entered a small opening lit by moonlight. And in the middle of the opening was an old wooden cabin. It was, well, not even a cabin. More like a shack half burnt to the ground, and with the roof completely covered by moss. I noticed a tiny empty window and a wooden door barely big enough for a man. "Reminds me of something," Kirill laughed darkly. "A king and a fool, huh? Then let's hope the woodsman won't offer us to feed his friends," I growled. I barged in, guns blazing, preparing to shoot on sight. But there was nobody inside the small room.
just a table, a rusty potbelly stove, a bed, and a wooden chest. A human skull was lying peacefully on the ground, a huge dark smudge covering the floor, looked suspiciously like dried blood. My mind instantly imagined how it must have been when it was still fresh. The hut probably reminded me of a slaughterhouse. I checked the skull and chuckled, unable to help myself.
Alas, poor Yorich. I knew him. Por Dio.
A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy.
What?
I heard Kirill outside calling me.
Nothing. All clear. Get inside.
We put Batu on the bed. Kirill closed the door and we barricaded it with the table and the chest. If we wished to survive, we had to hold this hut till the sunrise. For now, we could rest.
Kirill moved the skull somewhere in the corner facing towards the wall.
It looks creepy, he confessed, red with embarrassment.
What? You don't like our new company? Yorick is hurt, I smirked.
Who?
Kirill looked at me puzzled.
Kirill fell quiet, looking around the hut, and I felt so tired all of a sudden. I sat on the floor, leaning on the wall. For a moment, nothing happened, and then I could feel the wave of nausea and fatigue washing over me. My legs filled with lead, and my back and neck ached so bad, for a second, I thought I had broken something. All my muscles cried in pain. Now when we had time to breathe, both my body and my mind reminded me of the neglect with interest. The adrenaline and will to survive blocked my fear and panic. But now? What the hell did I get myself into? Again, as if I attracted trouble, but damn, this time was even worse. What's next? I'll be hunted by an interdimensional clown vampire? Dear God, what the actual F? Why me? What did I do? Just make it stop. I want to live, just live. Is that too bloody much to ask? It was as if a dam was holding a sea of raw emotion, and it went down all at once. My hand shook, and I could barely breathe. The knot formed in my throat threatening to choke me. I could only crawl into the corner, hug my knees, and just cry. I'm not proud of it. Still feel ashamed after all these years. So, while I was sobbing and feeling sorry for myself, Kirill kept his head cool and inspected the hut. If I was smarter, I would realize there was no source of light inside, and that this place should not exist. No people lived in the area. Kirill went through the chest we blocked the door with. Mostly rubbish, old rugs, ink and papers, a makeshift flint knife, and some dusty diary. A cool breeze came through the empty window, making me shiver. Batu decided to take a brief nap, completely exhausted during the night. No one objected to that. Batu was the only one who at least navigated in the woods. So we needed him refreshed. I was jealous that I couldn't do the same. Kirill was playing with the lighter, igniting it on and off. I was not sure what he was trying to do, and then I realized he was reading the diary we had found in the chest. I could have cared less. I felt empty after the earlier outburst. I guess my mind just decided to shut down. I was sick and tired of everything. The woods, the creatures, Morozov and Dima. None of it mattered anymore. The only thing I wanted was to lie and sleep 72 hours straight.
Hey, you need to see this, Kirill said sternly.
Your friend over there had left us a clue. Those bastards, they can't get away with it. He passed me the old diary.
We have to tell everyone, he exclaimed. People must know about this.
I chuckled, shaking my head. I never understood how Kirill could live that long and stay so distinguishedly naive. But he was my friend, and it's not like I had many of them left. So humoring him was the least I could do. The paper was fragile and old. The handwriting looked quaint, very neat and fancy. The letters reminded those of pre-revolution writings. The old believers who used to live here, maybe. It took some effort to read it. Kirill stared at me intently, expecting a reaction. Did he think I'd join him in the excitement of discovering some dark hidden truth? The moment I turned the first page, my hand stopped. The tingling in the back of my head returned. Some primal instinct told me that we were being watched. Slowly, I turned my gaze towards the entrance of the hut. Kirill did the same. In the tiny window, we saw a face. It looked malnourished and small, like the face of a little child. Pale skin clung tightly to the skull like a leather mask a size too small. Two wide eyes with tiny black dots instead of pupils. An impossibly wide smile. The creature grinned literally ear to ear, like a freakish toad showing us a row of human teeth. The bastard stared at us, never blinking once. I could see the excitement and some perverted playfulness on its face. The dots in its eyes wandered from me to Kirill and back, as if it was deciding whom it liked more. My blood froze. My limbs refused to obey, no matter how loud I mentally screamed at myself. The thing then raised something clutched in its clawed hand. A bloodied piece of someone's leg with a Kirza boot on it. The creature opened its mouth wide and began to chew, crunching and chomping the leg with pure, undiluted happiness. Blood and pieces of meat and fabric fell down. It tore one of the toes off with its teeth and continued munching, looking straight at Kirill with terrifying joy. Finally, one of us managed to break out of the trance. Batu, who was napping on the bed before, growled something menacingly in his native tongue. Then we heard a loud bang, and the face in the shadow disappeared. The gunshot snapped us out of our stupor. Kirill and I raised our AKs and pointed towards the door. "I thought you were watching. What the hell, people?" Batu said angrily. "I'd never fallen asleep if I knew." "Quiet," I replied. "Hear that?" We did. The movement outside. The rustling and crunching outside. All around us. The roof was trembling under heavy steps as if someone was deliberately trying to make themselves heard. Maybe they were. Or maybe it was just an animal instinct like the raptor thing from Jurassic Park. I dearly hope so. They were making as much noise as possible. The snarls, the rustling, the giggles. The giggles were the worst. Did they try to imitate us? Sent us to panic? I could tell there was at least four of these creatures lurking around the hut. Could it be more? My heart started pounding again, blood drumming in my ears. And my hands started shaking again, but this time, it was not from fear. Something just snapped inside of me. "Who the F are you? No one called you Ida Nkui?" I raged, clutching my gun. I was seriously through this BS. Screw those bastards. Screw the forest. Screw this damn hut. And especially screw those bloody maniacs from this island. Do they want a piece of me again? No thank you, sir. Not this time. I roared. Batu and Kirill joined me howling and cussing. Kirill was shaking from fear and anger. We were all done with this. With our backs to the wall. We were akin to rats in a trap. Like any rat, there was only one thing we could do. Something rammed the door. The makeshift barricade shook and moved. The dust fell from the ceiling, and the entire hut shook as if warning us that we might not survive another hit. The door cracked a bit, and Kirill suddenly ran towards the chest.
"The knife!" he screamed. "We need this knife. Where is it? Hold the door! Hold the door, damn it!"
Something hit the entrance again, widening the opening. Without thinking, I threw myself at the barricade, closing the door again. I didn't know why Kirill needed some old flint knife, but there was no time to ask. Batu raised his gun. I saw a flicker of movement in the window. The creatures were jumping back and forth like excited apes. I heard hushing whispers outside.
Come out, wherever you are.
Shut the hell up, I spat in return.
The window was not big enough for a man to get through, but I was not so sure about these creatures. Suddenly, a clawed pale hand appeared in the window and tried to grab me. I saw its sharp talons flash in front of my face. Close. Too close. Batu shot again, and the gaunt hand disappeared, and we heard an insulted cry. Another one made the hut reel. Some wood planks fell off. I stubbornly kept the door shut. Another hit. And another. Slowly, they were pushing me back. The opening grew larger and larger until I saw five long fingers slowly appearing in the opening. It playfully tapped on the door, almost as saying, "Really? Are you sure?" The long claws didn't fill me with optimism. The giggling and maniacal screeching outside grew louder and more excited. Batu opened fire at the door, barely missing me. A small bullet hole appeared on the finger, but it didn't jerk away. Batu shot again and again, showering me with splinters like they were shrapnel. Cursing his name, I desperately pushed the door. Swearing like a sailor, I looked at Kirill. He was still looking for that blasted knife, kneeling on the ground. Where the hell did we put it? The creature outside pushed again, gently, slowly, widening the opening. I saw a thin head appearing from the gap. The bastard was huge. Unlike the previous kid, this one looked more like a horse. The long face with long jaws. But I could still see the distinct human features. A small nose, tiny eyes with black dots instead of pupils, and the smile. The mouth of this one was even wider given its extended animal-like jaw. But it had the same unsettling grin, ear to ear, like a nightmarish toad. The thing looked at me with hunger and glee and then made a gesture with its index finger, like a parent who was playfully scolding a child. I raised my gun with one hand and pulled the trigger. The loud roar of the gun almost made me deaf, but even after a long burst, I still managed to hear a quiet click. The mag was empty. 30 rounds spent in less than a minute, yet this creature stood unharmed. Just a few scratches and wet gashes that leaked some dark liquid. The bastard didn't even flinch. In fact, its grin became even wider as it pushed the door harder, pushing me back. Its eyes were staring at my very soul. I growled and spit at it, then gripped my bayonet tightly. Suddenly, Kirill jumped forward, the stupid flint knife in his hands. The thing lazily moved its face towards him, and I saw its features change. The glee and happiness turned into concern. Kirill stabbed it in the eye. We heard the loud screams of panic and pain. We heard it. We bloody heard it. The smelly ooze poured through its severed eye socket. The thing immediately disappeared into the night, howling and crying like a puppy. "Did we do it?" I asked hopefully, reloading my AKM on reflex. "Yes, we did," Kirill laughed. The last moment the door smashed into a million pieces and the creature lunged in. The ugly bastard could barely fit into the room, scratching the ceiling with its hunched back. Fully naked, covered in some oily fluid.
Nothing so big should have moved that fast. The limbs were long and crooked, and the face was deformed and enormous. It rushed at us. Its healthy eye was filled with rage and was fixed on Kirill. The long hand struck my friend in the face with such inhuman speed and force that he flew back and smashed into the wall behind. No time to think. I opened fire again. The creature jumped again, headbutting me. The air left my lungs. It felt like I was hit by a tank. The heavy foot dropped on my chest, pinning me to the ground, cracking my ribs. The bastard stepped on me again, and now it was grinning, but not with glee or playfulness on its face. This time it was furious, and I could see a silent promise. The last few minutes of my life were going to be very memorable. Batu kept shooting, and I was desperately trying to find the bayonet I had dropped on the floor. The beast was not in a hurry and ran its talon over my cheek. It looked into my eyes as if we were lovers. I could smell the foul stench from its mouth. It reeked of old sweat, rotting entrails, and unwashed teeth. Finally, my palm felt on something like a knife handle lying on the floor. No time to think. I stabbed the beast's leg that was pinning me to the ground. Suddenly, it roared. I stabbed it again and again until it recoiled and released me. The flint knife was now in my arm somehow. I rushed forward, bodying the creature that was lulling its injured leg. It felt like I had hit a brick wall. The damn thing screamed into my face, raising its paws. In response, I stabbed it in the neck, in the belly, in its ugly face, and again, and again, and again. Blood and guts spilled on the floor, but I kept pushing and stabbing, pushing and stabbing. I could only see red in front of me. The rage completely clouded my mind. I hated it so much, for all the horror we had endured, for sending us into these damn woods, for running away like a coward, for letting me live while my best friend and my girlfriend died. Even when it was lying on the ground, limp and motionless, I kept stabbing. Even when Batu screamed at me and a gunshot rang, I paid him no mind. Just stab, 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 stab. "Die, Urod," I screamed. "Die! Why don't you die already? Die!" I don't know how long I was out. By the time I finally woke, I was standing over a bloody mess. The body of the creature covered in piercing wounds. Its twisting guts out, blood on the floor, on the walls, on the ceiling. With some amusement, I realized it tried to crawl away, to flee to safety. The creature's hand was half through the doorframe, desperately reaching for the woods, a terrified expression on what was left of its face. I grinned and laughed and could not stop laughing until my body hurt. "Hey, man," said Batu cautiously. "You, are you okay?" "No, I'm not," I muttered hysterically. Then a thought struck me. "Kirill." I looked around. He was lying in a pool of his own blood. The head split in half and almost tore off his body. I looked at him for some time, then turned around and sat in the corner. The creature on the front door twitched again. I looked at it with no interest. A pale, bony hand reached for the darkness outside and was trying to drag the body back to the woods. I shrugged and watched until it completely disappeared into the night. We sat through the rest of the night, watching and listening silently. At some point, we heard another rustling. I hadn't realized that the sun was up until I saw Lieutenant Frolov barging in, weapon raised. He looked at us with a mix of shock and relief.
"What the?"
he said quietly, looking at the mess inside. The entire hut was covered in dark blood. So was I. "Hey, Comrade Lieutenant," Batu waved him from the bed awkwardly. After that, I don't remember much. We carried Kirill's body outside. Frolov and the rest of the platoon were looking at us funny, but they never said a word. Batu and I were sent to the hospital. The nurse was not pleased when she saw me again and protested fiercely. Lieutenant Frolov raised an eyebrow, listening to her rant.
Nadia, do your damn job for once in your pathetic life, he said simply.
Or do you need a lesson on what happens when you disobey an officer? She shuddered as if Frolov slapped her face and decided not to press the issue. Batu's wound got infected, so he had to stay in the hospital for another 2 weeks. My own body was covered in bruises and scratches. A couple of cracked ribs were the peak of my injuries, so the doctors decided to clear me after 3 days. During that time, a lot happened. Frolov visited and told us everything that had happened while we were lost in the woods. Turned out, they found Morozov almost immediately. The idiot was hiding on a tree, scared shitless. Once he saw Lieutenant Frolov approaching, he ran towards him crying like a little girl. Everyone was so relieved and pissed at him that Frolov didn't even notice our team was missing. He only realized once the platoon gathered at the meadow where we buried the cigarette butt. Frolov could not send another search party into the woods at night. We already knew why. Frolov did something that surprised me, though. He apologized for leaving us behind, for not realizing one group was missing. I just nodded, not sure what to say. I had no strength to be mad at him for sending us, for forgetting us, for letting us die. In the end, I knew we were soldiers, not the Boy Scouts. So Frolov continued uninterrupted. Dima was nowhere to be seen. No sight of him, no matter how many search parties were sent to his last known locations. Good. I wasn't sure if I would not empty a mag into his face. As for Kirill, the official story was that he died in a bear attack. That made me angry. They could have at least said Kirill killed the bloody bear, maybe made it as if he was protecting me and Batu, or something along those lines. Not just die like an honorless mutt. Hearing my outburst, Frolov nodded and said he'd include my statement in the report. This way, Kirill would receive a medal or something. In a couple of years, he might even get a street named after him. Who knows? Maybe some military base even. At least someone besides the three of us would know his name. Kirill came from an orphanage. No parents, no wife, no kids. He raised himself up from the very bottom, even secured a free spot at the university, and got a government scholarship. He didn't deserve to die like some dirty gopnik. Kirill Krasnov. I wanted his name to matter. Lieutenant Frolov was found guilty of negligence for losing two soldiers and was demoted to junior lieutenant. Any awards or medals he received during the war were recalled, and the severe misconduct was added to his personal file. In practice, he became a pariah with no future in the army. He'd be one of those forever lieutenants who retire at 50 with no pension or with any distinctions under his name. "Are you all right, Comrade Lieutenant?" I asked him when he told me about the tribunal. "It's Junior Lieutenant now," he replied, smiling sadly. "Don't worry about me, soldier. You just got 6 months left here before the discharge. Try to stay low and don't get in the trouble, all right?" "Yes, Comrade Lieutenant." He looked at me again and asked, "You wanted to ask something, soldier." "Do I have to, Comrade Lieutenant?" "Junior Lieutenant." He shook his head. "Shoot." "What are those things?" I said plainly. "Do you think if I knew they would still live?" He wondered sarcastically. As far as I am aware, they lived it since, well, forever. Our colonel and all the big stars prefer not to notice them. No officer likes to speak of it. For some time, we thought they just died there. There was no attacks or any incidents for many years. Well, until those a-holes showed up. Who? I leaned closer, feeling like I was going to receive some forbidden knowledge. A few years ago, a team arrived from Moscow. No idea what branch they came from. GRU? FSB? MVD? Hell, it could have even been the presidential FSO. Spetsnaz folks, geared for war, machine guns, RPGs, fancy new NVDs, and some serious measurement equipment. Well, they entered the forest and never came back. The whole year after that, we were shitting our pants. The creatures returned in force, not a single night without an accident. The uglies even tried to enter the base. They all calmed down again, but even still, we didn't risk entering the woods after dark. Some said the Spetsnaz boys turned into the creatures. I don't know. He fell silent. In the hut we found? I asked after some time. The hell if I know, Frolov shrugged. Never seen that one before. We don't patrol those woods. I was as surprised as you to find it. There was a diary. I remembered. Did you read it? Kirill read it. He knew about the knife, that it would hurt them. Frolov looked at me intently and then shook his head. No, I didn't see any diary nor any knives. Soldier, it would be better for everyone if you forget this business. I sent everything we found to the colonel. Let them figure it out. This shit is definitely above mine and your pay grade. Then he left. We rarely spoke with Batu about that night. Only once did he ask me something. Did you see something strange in the woods? He asked uncertainly. Like a bunch of ghouls trying to eat us? I laughed sarcastically. No, I mean, when we left the hut. I don't remember. I don't remember much after Frolov found us. Batu nodded and murmured. Maybe it's nothing. When we were leaving, I think I saw someone near the hut, some old man. Then I turned and he disappeared. Let me guess, black robe, long beard, and a fancy hat? Maybe. He looked at me worryingly. Do you know who that was? Maybe. I shrugged. So, life went on. Both Batu and I were released from the hospital, and our service continued as if nothing had happened. One morning we saw the UAZ and a truck arriving at our base. The driver was just another conscript, but the passengers were definitely not. A lean captain in an old field uniform walked in the HQ. This was odd. By that time, we already knew all the officers on the base, but this guy? He didn't look like a typical paper pusher from the division HQ. Firstly, he wasn't cleanly shaven and had a slight bristle on the face. That was a severe misconduct in our colonel's eyes. Secondly, his chevrons were unknown to me, and Frolov had mercilessly drilled us to recognize all the chevrons from our Siberian military district. Soon we learned why. A fat paraparchik arrived in the barracks and ordered the company to move out. Our platoon was shepherded to HQ building where we found Frolik waiting for us near the entrance. He came to each of us, saying very quietly, "Play dumb and don't sign anything." Well, now I was officially in panic mode. One by one, we were invited into the colonel's office. There I learned the newcomer's name, Major Vladimir Volkov of the 135th Motor Rifle Regiment, 58th Army. I didn't like Volkov one bit. He had a face fitting his name, like a wolf. He had keen eyes and a silent threat on his seemingly relaxed face. I could almost feel like his cold gray eyes were penetrating my very soul. He was evaluating me like I was prey or worse. I've stared into the eyes of the beasts, madmen, and maniacs before. But his calculating look unnerved me much more. He asked very basic questions. What was life before the army? How do I feel? What do I think of the motherland? Nothing specific, really. So I replied honestly, not knowing what to expect. Life before the army was great. I'm feeling all right. I don't have particularly warm feelings towards the motherland, and I am pretty sure it's mutual. He laughed dryly at the last one and then asked, "Got yourself into a bit of trouble, eh? Got yourself shot, then got lost in the woods, attacked by a bear?" Volkov smirked dryly. "How are you holding up?" "I'm fine, according to the nurse." "And according to you?" "Hurt like hell, but I'm all right." He nodded and looked at the documents. My psychological profile, my physical records, and my training results. He didn't say anything, just nodded, putting my file away. The others in my company went through the same procedure. 2 weeks later, Batu, me, and 122 other lucky winners from our regiment were packing our stuff again. We were transferred to our new unit, Major Volkov's 1st Battalion of the 135th Motor Rifle Regiment. Our train was heading to the fun little town named Prokhodny. The worst part? It was right next to Chechnya, where the war raged for the last 20 years. The whole Caucasus region was a giant thorn in the Russian backside since the 18th century. And the recent war was just another escalation. I watched the news about the chicken wars when I was a kid, and those were some horror stories that kept me awake at night. Before we left our old base, Lieutenant Frolik walked over to me and Batu. "Listen closely, soldiers. Don't play heroes. Look after each other. Trust your commander. But don't expect any help from the higher-ups. You die there and no one will even bother to bury you, except your mates. And for the love of God, don't tell your parents. A heart stroke is not fun, trust me. And the last thing. Grab every single piece of ammo you could get your dirty little hands on. I don't care how. Beg, threaten, or steal. You'll need it." The whole trip was like another dream. I was sure that we had to get ourselves killed on the first patrol. The entire train was like a silent funeral procession. Everyone was grim as if they had already prepared their last testament. We were riding to the place thousands of kilometers from home, probably to die in some convoy ambush, or to be shot in the back by some 10-year-old Bin Laden wannabe, or to be eaten alive by some flesh-eating flies. No wonder Major Volkov watched us like a hawk. When we arrived at the station, I was fully prepared to be greeted by a suicide bomber. Well, things didn't go exactly this way. It was July of 2008, and we did not know that we were walking straight into the active war zone.